This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North. Thanks so much for tuning in today. As we wrap up our ongoing series, Project Milwaukee, Black Men in Prison, we conclude by looking at possible solutions to reduce Wisconsin's high rate of incarcerated black men. In the past few weeks, we've heard about efforts on the policy level to prevent incarceration to begin with and to help those formerly incarcerated men from returning to prison, like the organization we featured yesterday that's helping former inmates find jobs with local businesses. But for the two Milwaukee women we'll speak to next, the struggle to reduce the number of black men in Wisconsin prisons is far more personal. In their own ways, both Africa Imani and Barbara Robinson have lost sons. Imani's were killed by gunfire, and Robinson's are serving 100-year sentences. Yet both women feel the system, from the courts to corrections, is broken. They talked with Lake Effect's Stephanie Lecce about what they want to see changed. Imani tells her story first.
I had two sons that have been killed due to violence, July 29th of 99 and April 29th of 2000. So within 9 months, I've lost two of them to gun violence. For the last 14 years, I have been quite active in trying to pursue helping the detectives with bringing some kind of resolution to the case of my son, Ali. My other son, Kafi, was killed by a young man. I withhold his name, and he went to prison. I don't really know the history of his maybe police contact before, but I don't think it was great that to the point it would be impressive, you know. But he killed my son, apparently for no reason, shot him in the back 3 times with a sawed-off shotgun. I was quite angry and rightfully so, upset, hurt, and for the past 15 years, it's been a bit of a challenge. But a few years ago, I came to forgiveness for him, something that I had to pray for. So I've been working effectively to get him released. Every time he goes up for parole, he's denied. I just got a letter, I think it was Saturday in the mail, that he was denied again because he went up for parole this month. I don't understand why, because he has completed everything that they've asked him to do. He's gone beyond that. I have visited with him, and I think we have a good rapport. And I would like to see him released because I think that there are times when people commit crimes, and no, murder is a serious crime. And some people would not be like me to the point of wanting that perpetrator to be released. You know, some people, let's just lock him up and throw away the key. I view him as a young man who was in his early 20s who done a really stupid thing, even though it cost my son his life and our family a great deal of pain, which we still, you know, deal with. But, you know, you have to learn to forgive people.
Now, Barbara, you are also working for the release of three young men, your sons. Tell us your story.
Yes, all three of my sons are incarcerated, and that's a horror in itself. Because being raised here, not in Milwaukee, but in the suburbs, my boys actually came up through Catholic school and private schools and military school. I served 23 years in the military, came home, provided good for them, and they had everything they wanted. So upon graduation, I bought them a car, and my 18-year-old son was involved in an armed robbery, and his part in that was he was the driver of the vehicle with two of his friends. No one was seriously hurt. There was an off-duty police officer that was injured that night.
He was shot.
He was shot by one of the guys, my son's friend that was with him. It was three of them. And my son went off and left him and was charged with 122 years for a party to a crime and attempt homicide at the age of 18. My son, 18-year-old, had no prior records, no involvement with the police whatsoever. And I do believe that this is a very harsh punishment for someone. Then my 17-year-old son, who knew that his brother had not done anything wrong, he thought, well, I'll go down here and turn myself in and say that I did it. That way they will let his 18-year-old brother out. He would have a trial, and this is how his mind at the age of 17, he would have a trial, and the people would see him and say, well, it wasn't him, and they would let him out. And he thought he would have done his brother justice by getting him out. Well, he was charged with 114 years for placing himself there, 114 years. And he, too, with no prior record. So I've got both boys serving over 100 years. And my thing is, my 18-year-old was wrong in the fact that he was the driver of his vehicle. But his time has been served. And I do think that it's going on 19 years now that a 122-year sentence was total. It's unjust. It's unjust. And I'm very hurt and upset with that because here it is, I raised them to always tell the truth and do the right thing. They did that. You know, they asked for forgiveness. That's one thing. But they also were not looking for any special favors. The 18-year-old was willing to do his time for the crime. But 122 years is ridiculous.
This is an issue that seems to come up time and time again throughout our series, this idea of, well, you know, these men have chosen to commit a crime. They should serve their sentence. Why should we care? This isn't a problem about mass incarceration. This is a problem of criminality.
We never know what we're going to do until it actually happens to you. Before this happened to my sons, I could have said, well, you know, yeah, any person that commits a crime deserves to be locked up. But I would never say for that long, even if the person that took a shot at me. I'm a cop and I got shot at. Every last one of us have made some bad choices. We have all done something wrong. A lot of us just have not been caught. But we want people to forgive us. And we all have loved ones that may have been not only victims of crimes, but did some bad things themselves. We don't hold our loved ones to the same standard that we would like to hold people who we don't know. My sons are not hardcore criminals. They had not committed any other crime. They had jobs. I bet no one knew that. They both had a job. Both of them were working. But you don't hear that because the people only want to hear what is bad news. That's why they want to hear, oh, these boys were involved in a crime. Well, thank God no one was seriously hurt. I'm thankful for that. But the thing about it is they served their time and it's time for them to come home. That's justice. They realized they made a mistake. They made a bad choice in life, both of them, by whatever the choices were that they made. But they should not be held the rest of their life. Everyone deserves a second chance.
Criminals do choose to commit a crime. They do. For whatever reason, it is their choice. However, the punishment should fit the crime, not based on race, not based on where you come from, where you live. But that seems to be what happens, that it is, had it been, quote unquote, a white schoolboy, a good old American white boy, and he lived in Waukesha or Wauwatosa or Brookfield and committed the same crime, do you think he would have been sentenced to the same time? As her son, no. And 100 years is just ridiculous. You shouldn't even be sentenced nobody to know 100 years. That is just, it's out of place. There's no place for that in our society to want to keep somebody locked up. This goes back to rehabilitation. Where's the rehabilitation? You want to keep, you might as well just say life. So I think it's a matter of us having appropriate guidelines for the crime that is committed.
Why, Africa, do you look at the young man who killed your son and you say, at this point, he served his time for the crime that he committed. He deserves a chance to be released and to have a future.
No one deserves to be written off. I don't care who they are. You're still a human being. You know, I work with the Restorative Justice Program out of Madison. It's you know, it's a long process to get there, to be able to go see someone that you are the victim of or the family member of a victim. But when I sat down and I looked at him, and quite frankly, I can't even remember what he looked like at the trial when he was 25 or 26 years old, I see that he's losing his hair. He's going bald. His demeanor is comparing it to then because at the time, yeah, I killed your son. Yeah, I did. And he was, you know, he was all cocky and everything. I'm like, yeah, lock him up and throw away the key. I want him to do every day of them 25 years he was sentenced to. Really, I did. But you come to a reality and you see somebody and you look into what they're doing and talking to their social worker and you see that they have pretty much been a model inmate. They've done everything they've been asked to do. They've gone beyond that. They're not getting any trouble. They're not getting no major tickets. They really ain't getting no minor tickets in the past several years. So what is the point in keeping them locked up? There really is no point. It's just that the system want to keep them there. And I think the system is, you know, somebody come visit him and they'll spend money in the machines and this, that. It should not be about profit making. He's been eligible for parole for many years, and they continue to deny him. Now, if they were giving me a reason why they're denying him, and it was a legitimate reason, I might be able to understand it. But from what I see and my talking to him, he's shown me that he's ready to come back to society. And I think he's learned from the mistake he made. You know, there can be no restitution to me and my family. You know, they talk about, well, he needs to pay restitution. What can you do? What can you give me? What can you give my 19, soon to be 19-year-old grandson now, which is my son's son? There's nothing you can give me. There's no amount of money that's going to make it better. I'd rather see you just come out and do better and be a father to your daughter, who's now well and grown. But the system is a messed up system.
So what do we need to do? What does the system need to do in order to start giving those second chances?
The disparities that we see in our system with our police force and within the sheriff's office is not really compatible with what's going on in our communities. I think, and I understand, you know, Ed Flynn, I have nothing against him. I understand that he has a job to do, but it's how you do that job. You know, I seen him on TV that night, and I'm just damn sick of it, and this and that. You hear that all the time. Mm-hmm. It gets to be rhetoric. The problem is, a young man addressed this the other week when we were there at the Centennial Hall. We don't have rec places, but yeah, we got the Boys and Girls Club. But we don't have activities to keep people off the street. This is why kids are hanging out in the street, because those who are interested in gangs, the gangs are going to be interested in them. But if we have avenues for these young girls and these young men, a place to go, to whatever stresses they're dealing with, they can go and they can relieve those stresses. It is a way to keep kids off the street. If we had more of these and rec places and people, adults who are going to be responsible, not only for your own children, but for other children in the neighborhood. When I say responsible, give them something good to do. But these things have to be funded. So either our city, our county, or the state needs to fund these things. And this is the issue. Because you see out here, okay, we don't have no roller skating rinks inside. We want to go roller skating, and our kids want to, we got to go all the way out there to Brookfield. Movie theaters in the inner city, where are they at? They're all gone. So what is there positive for kids to do? So what do? They turn to the gangs. They turn to the street. They turn to prostitution. They turn to gun violence. They turn to all these things. So we have to find a way to help our community in order to help our children, because the next generation, it may not be a next generation.
And we're not going to help our children by calling them names.
Yes.
You hear Sheriff Clark, David Clark, and other people in they can get on TV and say, we got to get these thugs, these mm-hmm. lowlifes, these dogs. That is not helping a person. They may have done committed some doggish acts or crimes, and I'm not by no means condoning it once again, but let's deal with them on an intellectual basis.
Exactly.
That you would like to be dealt with. Maybe if we stop calling them thugs, stop calling them dogs and treating them like that, maybe they will change.
Mm-hmm.
The problem in Wisconsin is not going to change because the people in authority have not yet
yes.
changed. When they change, we will see a change. Until then, you're not going to see one.
Yeah.
Where does that happen? At what points do we see that dehumanization happen?
I think that when you get to the point and you see people coming in, you lose that touch of humanity, because you begin to think, oh, everybody's just alike. Because of the profession you have chose to be in, our state of Wisconsin has become so disassociated mm-hmm. with people. And they forget that they are human beings. And the only time it makes a difference is when it's you mm-hmm. or your loved one. You look at everything totally different. You don't think about how bad the people you sentence, whether you've been a judge or the police officer, the person that you arrested and beat, the person that you stopped. This is the mentality of people. And I think what we have to do is try to remove the racism out of the equation. That's number one.
That's it.
Get people who wanting to be fair. And then we do have some in our system, but we have a lot more
yeah.
that aren't.
You're both working to get these men out of prison. Do you ever worry about if they do get out, when they do get out, what they're going to be facing at that point?
Actually, I do, because this young man, actually, I have a plan for him, and we've discussed this. We are going to help him in whatever way that we can, whether it's try to help him get a job or with housing or, you know, and help him if he needs some issues with psychiatric issues. But, you know, a person can be holding things inside because of what the prison system has done to them while they're there, that they might need to see a psychiatrist or a psychologist when they get out. We're willing to help him in every way that we can because, see, that's the thing. People coming out, they have to transition back into society. A person just can't come back out here, jump back into their old hood because life has changed. But if we don't have something in place for these people when they come out, they are going to go right back. We make it hard for ex-offenders. I hate to see people say on their application, offender. They are an ex-offender. They've, they've committed a crime. They've done their time. They are, yes, they're an ex-offender. They're no longer an offender. Mm-hmm. So why can't I come out here and get a job? Why do I have difficulty even getting an ID? Why do I have difficulty even going so much as getting a cell phone? And now my PO got to track every call I make. Come on, you done your time. You might still be on paper, but you have done your time. So why do we make it difficult when they get out? This is why people go back.
Everybody in the community that has anything to say and aren't doing anything about it is just as guilty and just as wrong as the person, the inmate, that's coming out.
That's true.
I'm saying I'm here. I'm here for them. A lot of people who I have arrested and who are doing time, I'm on their visiting list. I go in. I take my time. I don't have to do this. But I sit. I listen. I talk. I'm not afraid of people. And because some people commit certain crimes, homicide, whatever, I'm still not afraid of these people. Like I said, a lot of your ministers hide behind the pulpit. A lot of your police officers hide behind their gun on their badge. I have always been the type of person, if I want to do anything, if I want to know anything, I'm going to approach that. And what am I going to do? Yes, I'm helping. I'm trying to get everybody that's eligible out of prison. What am I going to do? Right now, I'm in the process of trying to buy a building, and it's going to house these people. So if no one wants to deal with them, send them to me. I'm going to buy this building that's going to house these prisoners that's coming out, these inmates that's coming out. I will help them transition back into society. And I want to make a change. I want these people out. I'm not afraid to deal with them. I want them out. Judges that sentence these guys intend for them to get out. So with Department of Corrections holding people in past their mandatory release or not letting them out because they don't have any place to go, they can come to me. And I'm here to say that. They can come to me. This is what I'm going to do. This is what I'm going to do.
Well, Barbara, Africa, thank you both so much for coming in and telling your stories.
Thank you so much.
Africa Imani of Milwaukee is working to get the man who killed her son released from prison. Barbara Robinson, also of Milwaukee, is advocating for the release of her three sons, two of whom are serving 100-plus year sentences for armed robberies in which a police officer was shot. They spoke with Stephanie Lecce. President Obama announced a joint NCAA Department of Defense concussion research initiative yesterday. The Medical College of Wisconsin is one of only three institutions leading that research. We'll talk with a head researcher when Lake Effect returns on WUWM.